I retired as the executive director of Grassroots Leadership, where I, you know, we did civil rights and union community organizing all over the South. And, you know, I stayed at 66. It felt right to step down. I had Social Security, had my pension from the Musicians Union, one of the last defined benefit pensions in our country, sadly. And I thought, yeah, let's take it a little easy. But, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, here we are. Norm, you know my music over the years. Usually I put out a record every 3 or 4 years. You know, no, over 40 years, that's resulted in 18 albums. This summer I put out 2 albums in 3 months.
I noticed.
So much for retirement.
Well, yeah, but then on top of that, you managed to write a song for Mara Levine and record a song with Mara Levine, the Dutchman from Michael Smith, and that's on her album. But these two albums that you're talking about now, one, Bristol Bay, already soared to number one on the folk charts back in July, and this new one is soaring right up the charts as well. I haven't seen anything like this in a long, long time, Cy.
Well, you know, all I can be is grateful, Norm. I mean, I think there are a couple of reasons that these two CDs are doing so well, and they actually don't have a whole lot to do with me. The first CD, which is called Bristol Bay,
yep,
is in service of a cause. It's about Musicians United to Protect Bristol Bay. This is we forgot to mention that in retirement. Okay, I'm going to tell it to you this way. I have been married forever to Elizabeth K. Mark Binnick, who's a feminist philosopher and a public philosopher. And then we go back to being best friends in high school in 1959. So Elizabeth was taking me to the airport a couple weeks ago. And she said, now let me guess, I'll bet you're going to Alaska. Now she knew perfectly well where I'm going, but you know, she's just setting it up. I said, yeah, I'm going to Alaska. She said, now, is this the project where a commercial fisherman in Bristol Bay asked if you would write one song as a theme song for their campaign to stop the pebble mine and to protect the wild salmon, the communities, the jobs, the cultures, the languages of Bristol Bay forever? I said, yeah, that project, she said. And instead of writing one song, you wrote 30. I'm like, yeah, well, I'm a little bit of an overachiever. And she said, and then you made this CD with Jens Kruger called Bristol Bay, and that became, as you just said, Norm, the number one CD on the folk DJ list for July. I said, well, you know, the DJs are kind. What could I tell you? And she said, oh, right. She said, and then also you decided that you would build a network of, am I right, 1,000 musicians all around the world to do something small but relevant to help stop this disastrous open pit mine, which would be the largest open pit gold and copper mine in the whole world. She said, so you're building this network of 1,000 musicians. You've already got 375 people signed up. I said, yeah, well, you know, musicians are kind, they're generous, they want to do good in the world. She said, you know, they should have asked me first. She said, before they asked you to write one song, I could have told them what happens.
Well, I'll tell you, kicking back, taking it easy, I know, sitting on that front porch in retirement, vegetating, everybody goes out and picks a fight with a multi-million dollar mining company that happens to be affiliated with the Koch brothers, who are billionaires. Yeah, that happens every day. Of course, you know, what can I say?
Well, I should hope it. You know, I mean, people say to me, because I'm a very happy person. And I really enjoy life. I've got a lot of privilege. I've got a lot of things to be grateful for. You know, most of it, I just was lucky enough to have it come my way. I don't take credit for it. But people say to me, how can you be so happy when the world is in such disastrous shape? And I say to them, and this is the truth, Norm, I say, you know, I get up in the morning, I take a shower, I shave, I go and I look in my mirror, and I say to myself, Sigh, what can I do today to mess up some evil corporation? And it just brings me peace of mind, Norm. It makes me happy. You know, I mean, it's a living. What can I tell you?
So how is the battle going with Pebble Mining Company up there?
You know what? It is unbelievable and amazing. You know, I wrote a book recently. I think we talked about it on the air, called Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice. And one of the things I said in it that I'm really glad I said. I said, you know, people say to you, if we stand up and fight back, what's the guarantee we're going to win? And I say, there's no guarantee. We lose as much as we win, but we do win. But there is one absolute guarantee, and that's if we don't fight, they win every single time. So I believe that you never know when you're going to win and when you're going to lose. People say, okay, here's this, you know, millions and millions of dollars being spent to get this mine in place. The Koch brothers, as you just said, backing it up. How can you possibly win? Well, the answer is through the organized power of people. So two things have happened. One is the Environmental Protection Agency, the United States EPA, ruled against the Pebble Mine. They said but first they had a public comment period. They said to anybody, you know, give us your opinion as to whether this mine should be built. We will do our own scientific findings, but we want to know what people think. Over 90% of the people who sent in comments were against the mine, even higher in Alaska. So the Pebble Partnership, which is the official name for these evil corporations, you know, said, that's not fair. We didn't have enough time to get our comments in. I mean, this is hysterical, because here's this billion-dollar corporation complaining they didn't have time, whereas everyday working people, people who fish for subsistence, you know, hunters, gatherers, you know, the Yupik people who live in these villages you can't even get through to except by dog sled or air, or a snow machine, they managed to get their comments in. The corporation couldn't manage. And the EPA, I think, in a very smart political move, said, okay, if you feel it wasn't fair, we'll reopen the comment period for another 30 days. So the Koch brothers put in, who knows how much they put in, the Koch brothers put in money to get, you know, organizations like the National Rifle Association to say, we think that this mine is the best thing since sliced bread, right? And Musicians United, you know, our small but powerful group of musicians, emailed our friends, we went on Facebook, we went on Twitter, and we said, hey, everyday people, we have to comment too. And so did the National Resources Defense Council, and so did Trout Unlimited, all the organizations that are on the side of the people in the salmon of Bristol Bay. And even with the Koch brothers' money, 68% of the people said, no, this mine should never be built. That is a stunning and staggering victory. So that's the first one. And then the new head of the EPA went to Alaska to talk to everybody concerned, walked around with the head of the Pebble Partnership and with the president of Anglo-American. This is a British-Australian mining company that has been around since the 19th century that was a 50% partner in the Pebble Partnership, putting up something like $1.5 billion. And 2 weeks later, and this is amazing, Norm, this is an unbelievable victory, 2 weeks later, Anglo-American said, we are pulling out. We are leaving the Pebble Partnership. They said, we believe that we need to invest in operations that have a greater possibility for profit and less possibility of risk. So, you know, that sort of left the remaining partner, Northern Dynasty, out of Canada, left them kind of high and dry. Now, the fight is not over. The fight's got to go on for another 10, 15 years. There's no way. There's too much gold and too much copper in that ground for them to give up. But it is a staggering blow to the hopes of the corporations to build this mine. And it's a great victory for the people that are out there on the fishing boats in Bristol Bay.
It's also a great victory for all of us, since they were going to build this tremendously large, toxic slurry pond up there that set right at the headwaters of Bristol Bay, where, well, I'm kind of prejudiced. I like salmon, but
it's very funny, because at one point, some one of the people who's for the mine accused one of the activists, saying, "You love salmon more than people," and the activist said, "Well, actually, we do kind of catch them and eat them. This is not like polar bears, right?" But there are a lot of issues at stake, Norm. And first, of course, it's the salmon. I mean, this is Bristol Bay is the richest remaining wild sockeye salmon fishery in the entire world. Now, this is also because we've managed to destroy many others, like the Fraser River fishery and the Columbia River fishery. The Columbia River fishery was the richest, but that's gone. So The Environmental Protection Agency, again, the EPA, says that on average, year by year, because, you know, the salmon runs vary, they said that 46% of all the wild sockeye salmon in the world come out of Bristol Bay. So that's the first thing. There are several thousand families depend on the commercial fishery in Bristol Bay. It only lasts for 6 weeks, but you can make a year's income. And, of course, you're working the rest of the year on your boat, on your nets, on your gear. It's not like you just wake up one morning, go fishing, and then come back 6 weeks later and go back to Margaritaville and lay on the beach and drink margaritas with Jimmy and Warren Buffett. Did you know that they're third cousins?
I'll tell you what, I didn't know that, but I do know, as I said, I've seen some of those videos of people up there who do fish for salmon, and their concern are polar bears, and if I caught a salmon, that polar bear better watch out for me, or those grizzlies too.
Well, you know, when I was up there in August for a festival called Salmon Stock, it's the creation of the Renewable Resources Coalition, one of the major organizations fighting the mine, and, you know, the whole point is to raise consciousness. And I was sitting there at the, you know, I'm working the table for Musicians United to protect Bristol Bay, signing up artists, and across was the kind of the songwriter stage, and this guy named Hurricane Dave got up there, and I suddenly realized what he had just sung was, "The grizzly got my salmon, but she let me keep my arm." I'll ask him to send you a CD. It is hysterically funny. He is one of the funniest guys on the Alaskan part of the planet. So yeah, so no, I think in a fight. But I'm going to tell you, Norm, I've known you a long time, buddy. And if that grizzly tries, that's just what you said. If that grizzly tries to take your salmon away, that grizzly is in big trouble.
Yep, it sure is.
Yep, yep.
Yeah,
you're gonna like, you know, throw 8 tracks at that grizzly.
Oh, I do more than that. I'm tough when it comes to just food. You know, I'm a seafood person. I see food and I eat it.
Well, I like that. So, but here's the other thing. It is about people. You've got thousands of people, people who fish commercially, the cannery workers, the packing house workers, the folks who run the ships that transport it, the folks who run the cooler lockers that they stay in. It's a $15 billion industry. The Pebble Partnership says, we're going to bring jobs. And everybody says, no, we've already got 15,000 jobs. And you might bring 1,000 more jobs. And that's great if the mine doesn't destroy the other 15,000. But there is no open pit mine in the history of the entire world that has not leached sulfuric acid and copper into the water below. And when, Norm, you just talked about that, the slurry pond. You know, when I was first emailed about the Pebble Mine by this great commercial fisherman named Dan Strickland, the guy who invited me to Alaska, he said, you know, and there will be 12 billion tons of toxic waste. And I said to Elizabeth Minnick, my partner and spouse, I said, you know, I just wish that activists didn't feel the need to exaggerate and could stick to the facts. I said, there is just no way it's 12 billion gallons of toxic waste. You know, it's probably 12, maybe it's 12 million gallons. That's enough. We don't need to exaggerate. She said, why don't you check the company website, see what they say. The company says 12 billion gallons of toxic waste. They said, but don't worry. We're using modern technology to make sure it stays in the holding pond. Guess what that technology is?
What's I?
We're going to line it with clay.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. 750-foot tall. I mean, you know, Norm, I mean, frankly, if I wanted to make up a bizarre scenario, which I've been capable of doing in song, I could not do better than this. Are you ready? I mean, are you sitting down?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, so this holding lake, whatever we call it, it's going to be 13 miles long, 750-foot high dam. This lake is sitting on a seismic fault.
Oh, yes.
Right. It's sitting on one of those faults where earthquakes happen. Alaska had, in the history of earthquakes, in the history of the, since they have been recording, you know, earthquakes on that Richter scale, you know, 7.2 or 6.8, those are staggering. The second worst earthquake in the entire history of the world happened in Alaska, 100 miles from where they're putting the pebble mine that's sitting on a seismic fault. I want to bet on this?
Well, not on that side. When that mine plays out, and it will play out, they'll leave. And those jobs will go with them. And that slurry pond will still be there waiting for the next earthquake or a slight leak. And there you have an ecological time bomb just waiting to happen.
Well, it is. I think you were playing that song, Dead Man Sand, right?
Yeah. Earlier, the first song I played was Hildy.
Oh, Hildy's good. That's it. We'll get there. But Dead Man Sand is about a true incident that happened in 1915 when 50 boats were stranded on the sandbar that is called, ever since, Dead Man Sand. And, you know, and I compare, in the song, I compare the disaster that happened then when during a storm and flood, what would happen if the dam breaks. You know, I write, there are forces more powerful than concrete, no dam so strong that it can't fall. And, you know, and talk about when it breaks, because it's not if it breaks, it's when it breaks. Maybe it's 500 years from now. But when that dam breaks, it's the Lord have mercy on us all. Because it will destroy everything downstream, and we know that.
Si, you want me to play that song for them?
Norm, you are a genius. That would be a great idea.
All right, here is Si Khan from his album Bristol Bay, Dead Man's Sand.
Love you for the times you can remember, in the early years of fishing on the bay. Aluminum had not yet been discovered. Boats were built of wood the old-time way. No inboard V8 engines to push them through the waves. Only gaff rig sails, they worked by hand. They were doing fine till that day in 1915. 100 lost their lives on Dead Man's Sand. They can see the rolling wall of water. They have no place to run, no place to stand. They can only wait for it to hit them while they sit high and dry on Dead Man's Sand. Boats were stranded on the sandbar in the middle of the bay, so far from land. The storm came up without warning, caught them high and dry on Dead Man's Sand. The wind whipped the water into waves so high they couldn't see each other through the spray. The tide came in with a vengeance and washed the people all away. They can't see the rolling wall of water. They have no place to run, no place to stand. They can only wait for it to hit them while they sit high and dry on Dead Man's Sand. 100 miles north of the harbor, where the caribou cross the mountainside, some people who don't care at all about us want to build a dam 2 miles wide. There are forces more powerful than concrete. No structure so strong that it can't fall. 10 billion tons of toxic waste behind that dam. If it breaks, have mercy on us all. We can't see the rolling wall of water. We have no place to run, no place to stand. We can only wait for it to hit us, like those poor lost souls on Dead Man's Sand.
And there you had Cy Conn from the album Bristol Bay giving us Dead Man's Sand. And we've got Cy Conn on the telephone right now.
Yeah, you got me tied to it. I tried to get away, Norm, but I couldn't.
Daggone. I'll tell you, it was kind of interesting. I was listening to you sing to me while you were talking to me at the same time. That's a neat trick.
Norm, it's an old technology.
Oh, okay.
Hey, listen, while we're talking about Dead Man's Sand, the musical brilliance there has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the great Jens Krüger, the Swiss-German banjo player and producer. And in fact, you know, the Krüger brothers were on the Letterman show last night. How many bluegrass acts ever get on Letterman? And you know why?
Well, I imagine because they're extremely talented.
That's part of it, but it's also because Steve Martin, you know, the comedian, actor,
banjo player too,
a great banjo player. 4 years ago, he established the Steve Martin Prize for Banjo and Bluegrass Excellence, and Jens Krüger won it this year. I went out with Jens and his wife and two daughters to celebrate last week, and Jens was talking about how he had played music until 5 in the morning, and you know, then at 8 in the morning, somebody started banging on the door, and he pulled the pillow over his head, and he wouldn't answer the door, and he looked out, and it was Federal Express. He figured they'd go away, and they kept banging and banging. Finally, he went down there and said, couldn't you just bring it tomorrow? The guy says, no, Jens, I got to have your signature. He says, why do you have to have my signature? I'm here. He says, you got to sign. They told me, don't leave without his signature. So Jens signs, goes inside, opens the Federal Express package, and out falls a check for $15,000 made out to him. And a letter signed by Steve Martin and Alison Brown and Bela Fleck and all the banjo greats saying that he's got this award. So that's why they're on Letterman last night.
Boy, that'd be nice to open up an envelope and $50,000 check fall out.
Yeah,
but
yeah, imagine if he hadn't opened it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something else. I consider Jens one of the probably finest banjo players in the world. And if anybody doubts it, all they have to do is listen a little bit. I believe he's even got some things on YouTube.
By the way, Jens and I are both here in Raleigh, North Carolina for the International Bluegrass Music Association annual World of Bluegrass Gathering. And I've got 3 45-minute performances today with the Looping Brothers.
Whoa, hey, let's talk about your new album, because it's moving up the charts pretty fast, too. The Aragon Mill, the Bluegrass Sessions. I started out by playing Hilda.
And, oh, great.
I want to talk about this album. How did this thing come about?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations like in a police lineup. We disagree. The Looping Brothers say it was my idea, and I say it was their idea. But okay, so first, I've known these guys. There's 3 guys from Germany. And I've known them for 15 years as the Looping Brothers. And I could never figure out what that meant, the Looping Brothers. So finally, last year, when I was over in Germany, we were working on the album, I said, so where did you get this name? And they're like, Cy, it's Charlie, it's Ira. I'm like, oh my God, the Leuven Brothers, right? Great brother, country act, bluegrass act from the 30s. So they're named in honor to the Leuven Brothers. And last night they were doing a couple of Leuven Brothers songs, sounding just great. So, but the idea, we'll just go with my story because I think it was their idea, was to take a bunch of my songs and to arrange in bluegrass style. Now, it's not like that hasn't been done. There's some really, you know, fine bluegrass players that have done my songs. Kathy Mattea, the Dry Branch Fire Squad, Blue Rose, Laurie Lewis, a lot of bluegrass bands have covered my songs. But there's never been an album that was all my songs, all done bluegrass style. So that was the basic concept. I think we talked about this maybe 3 years ago. So when we agreed we would do it, the Looping Brothers said, so you'll choose the songs, right? I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, I think there are 3 songs that we need to do because they're sort of my bluegrass signature songs. They're the songs of mine that are best known, most performed, and most recorded in bluegrass. And that's, as you said earlier, Norm, that's Aragon Mill. The second one is Wild Rose of the Mountain. And the third is Gone, Gonna Rise Again. These are all known songs in bluegrass. I said, so we got to do those 3 because that's kind of our signature. I said, but beyond that, you know, you've got every LP, cassette, and CD I've ever put out. You've got at least 100 more songs that I gave you that I thought were potentially bluegrass that I've never recorded. You make the decision. Don't even tell me. I'm just going to show up in Germany and record whatever you did. So they chose a dozen songs. And the other night, somebody asked me, you know, this is sort of the same question, you know, and I ended up saying, you know, they completely surprised me. And I went through and counted on the back of the album, of the 12 songs over and above Aragon Bill, Wild Rose of the Mountain, and Gone Gonna Rise Again, only 3 of those 12 were songs that I would have chosen myself. Hilda was one of them, because that's clearly a mountainy bluegrass song. But the great majority of the songs that the Looping Brothers chose, I would not myself have chosen, simply because I don't have the musical imagination to envision them as bluegrass songs, and they did. But they did a magnificent job. By the time I got to Germany in May of 2012, they had all the basic tracks laid down. You know, the rhythm guitar, the rhythm banjo, a little bit of all of the bass. And then I sang the lead vocals and went home. And they added magnificent three-part harmony vocals to most of the songs. They added some wonderful fiddle and mandolin work by Uli Seeker, some great guitar and banjo lead by Matthias Malcher, very fine bass work by Ralph Strotman. And then they brought in 2 guest artists, one from Sweden, a Swedish dobro player named Nicky Wyden, who just did gorgeous work on 2 tracks, and then the great Dutch bluegrass fiddler Jost van Es, who's the fiddle player on my earlier CD called We're Still Here, tribute to working people. So we've got musicians from Sweden, from the Netherlands, from Germany, and from North Carolina, all putting this together.
And just keep in mind, folks, this is Cy Conn kicking back and taking it easy after retiring.
Now, Norm, be fair. I've got 1 foot up on the bed in the motel room in Raleigh where I'm at IBMA.
Well, Cy, I'll tell you another song that's on this album that a lot of bluegrass people probably do not realize that you wrote, To Hear Doc Watson Play.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't, the song is quite recent. So I don't, other than the Looping Brothers and me, it was on an earlier album. It was on, I think it was on Thanksgiving. But no, I'm sorry. I don't even know what album it was on. Was it? Do you happen to know?
No, not offhand. I have them all, but like you said, you've recorded what? Quite a bit.
Yeah, well, you kind of lose track.
But I'll tell you.
Maybe it was on the Encourage, which, again, Jens Krüger produced. And, that was the number one CD for 2010 on the Folk TJ list.
No, I don't think it was on Courage.
No, well,
I'll tell you one.
Maybe it's a Merle Haggard song. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I actually used to have this nightmare where I would show up at this country music festival and Merle Haggard would be singing one of my songs. I don't remember which one it was. And I would be like so pleased and kind of fishing for compliments. I'd say to the person next to me, boy, Merle sure can write him. Merle sure can sing. And he said, that's a great song he wrote. And I'm like, oh, my God. I wonder if I accidentally passed a Merle Haggard song off of one of my own.
Well,
I don't think so. I think I've probably stolen a few notes, but not an entire song.
Since the album,
I'm very happy with that song. It's a, Doc Watson is a force that we all reckoned with happily. There's nobody, I believe, in music who hasn't in some way been touched by Doc's, creativity, his imagination, his good heart, his persistence, his work ethic. He was just a great musician and a great human being and a great loss.
Well,
I wrote it before he died, about 2 years before he died.
I'll tell you something.
And I mean it is, if I had a gold watch and chain, I would pawn them any day. I'd walk across the Blue Ridge Mountains to hear Doc Watson play.
And Cy, I'll tell you, I heard other bluegrass artist actually play that song at festivals and so forth, and especially someplace like Merle Fest or whatever. And I'd like to play it for our audience right now, okay?
Oh, go for it.
To
for
hear Doc Watson play, here's Cy Conn and the Looping Brothers.
But I had Dog and Rosalie. I'd cry along that vinyl record when they sang Your Long Journey. If I had a gold watch and chain, I would pawn them any day. I'd walk across the Blue Ridge Mountains to hear Doc Watson play, just to hear Doc Watson play. The harder falls the early frost, the brighter shine the autumn leaves. The words of those we've loved and lost bring us comfort while we grieve. If I had gold watch and chain, I would pawn them any day. I'd walk across the Blue Ridge Mountains to hear Doc Watson play, just to hear Doc Watson play. Singing time has passed, and all our best is left behind. The songs we loved will live and last, like thoughts of spring in the winter time. If I had no marching chain, I would pawn them any day. I'd walk across the Blue Ridge Mountains to hear Doc Watson play, just to hear Doc Watson play.
Sycon and the Looping Brothers. Did you notice how that guitar player actually copied Doc Watson's style perfectly?
Isn't that amazing? That's Matthias Malcher. Matthias and Uli were in a very famous band called Groundspeed, sort of literally the groundbreaking bluegrass band in Germany. It's named after a Bill Monroe tune called Groundspeed. You know, and they performed at Bean Blossom Bill Monroe's festival. They toured the United States with some of the bluegrass greats like dobro player Josh Grave, Eastern Kentucky fiddler Kenny Baker, and with Dan Query, fabulous guitarist. So, you know, they've got a real bluegrass history. They've been working. Uli and Matthias have been working together for 30 years, and then Ralph just joined the band a couple of years ago.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're pretty, you know, pretty sporting right and left hand both, and on banjos, guitars, mandolins, everything about it. I'll tell you,
I think the other thing, Norm, is that the arrangements they gave to the songs. When I said, you know, that I wouldn't have chosen nine of the songs, it's because I didn't see them as bluegrass songs, but they changed rhythms, they changed time signatures, they changed keys, and I think it's pretty much a straight-ahead bluegrass album. It's not like kind of on the margins. That's up the middle bluegrass.
Well,
and I really love what they did with my songs. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Si, I'll tell you something about your songs. You have the ability to listen to people's stories, hear their feelings and emotions, and put them into music. They're real, they're true. And no matter what form of music it's placed in, I absolutely guarantee you it will fit. It fits in bluegrass, it fits in folk, it fits in country. I have no doubt it could probably be booed into rock and roll. I'd hate to hear it reach rap. But,
okay, Norm,
they're true.
Sit down again, buddy.
Yeah.
I know you got to do some underwriting. I'm going to tell you one thing. Actually, my next CD is a hip-hop CD.
Oh, no!
Well, our youngest son of three, whose name is Gabe Kahn, but who has been in the hip-hop world for 20 years as Brycon. He and I have written and recorded an album together.
Oh, well, I'll listen. But like I said, every one of your songs, everyone tell a real human, true story. And that's why they carry. That's why it has the resonance with people. But you're right. I have to read some underwriting.
Okay. And can I leave the phone for 30 seconds and come back?
Yeah, sure thing.
Before you do this?
Sure thing.
Okay.
Support for WYSO comes from listeners like you and the University of Dayton Arts Series presenting the Dayton Philharmonic Chamber Orchestra performing Speaking Up in Concert. 20th Century Composers take on Human Rights on Thursday, October 3rd at 8 p.m. in the UD Bowl Theater. Ticket information is available at 937-229-2545. Today's weather calls for it to be sunny, high around 80 degrees. Tonight it's going to be mostly clear, low around 57. Sunday, a 40% chance of showers, high around 72. Sunday night, there's a 30% chance of showers, low around 57. I think they're telling us it might rain. Support for WYSO comes from listeners like you and the Dayton Philharmonic presenting Live and Let Die, a tribute to the music of Paul McCartney on Friday, October 18th at the Schuster Center. Tony Kishman and his band join the full orchestra to perform hits from McCartney's Beatles, Wings, and solo years. Information at DaytonPerformingArts.org. And the Victoria Theater Association welcoming the return of Cincinnati Over the Rhine to the Victoria Theater stage on October 5th. They'll play fan favorites as well as tunes from their new release. Meet me at the edge of the world. Ticket at TicketCenterStage.com.
Well, are we through underwriting?
Yes, we are.
Nice job.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. Part of the thing, we don't have commercials. We have underwriters. They don't determine what we play or how we play it. And they value the station. That's why they underwrite. They realize the value of public radio. Coming up here.
Well, you know, and so you know that I'm about to donate a whole bunch of autographed CDs to the fundraising drive. Does that make me an underwriter?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to be offering those, and you said they'll be autographed as special premiums during our
Absolutely.
Membership campaign on Detour. So that's a chance for someone out there to get a hold of your albums autographed on top of that. And you can take home a little Psy-Con with you and listen to it anytime, anywhere. But that's not going to happen until we reach our membership campaign coming up between October 7th and October 13th.
I believe in public radio, community radio, listener-supported radio, pirate radio, low-power FM, suitcase radio, because it's a democratic art forum, and it belongs to us. It's liberated territory, because you're right. Nobody tells WYSO what to play on the air or what not to play on the air. With the exception of the seven deadly words, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You could check out George Carlin's routine on that one. Quite seriously, I mean, it's a medium that belongs to all of us. I mean, I love radio because you're uncensored. I mean, you should show good manners when you're on the air. But beyond that, it's something that belongs to all of us, and it only goes forward if we contribute and support. If we want good radio, we have to be good stewards of our airwaves, and we have to support our local stations.
And when you consider that all commercial media is in, what, five or six sets of hands, all corporate, and we stand out all by ourselves, both public radio and public TV, and as long as we stay free, at least you're getting to hear some of what I believe is the better quality. But,
you mean like my music?
Yes, like your music.
Oh, nice lead-in. Boy, that was a soft pitch if I've ever had one.
Well, hey, you know, What can I say? I know that you're
said
retired
very
and
nice things, Norm. Thank you.
Well, I know you're retired and trying to take it easy.
Well, you're really rubbing this in, aren't you?
Well, yeah. You know, because I know there are young people out there who automatically think, well, when somebody's retired, or they're just going to sit there and, you know, vegetate and not do anything. And here, we didn't even mention, Cy, all the various musicals that you're involved in writing the scores for.
I was going to say something because what musical styles. You know, I had the greatest stroke of luck. I have a musical called Silver Spoon. I won't. Another time we'll talk. You know, actually, another time we should talk about my musicals. But my co-author Amy Merrill, a very fine playwright from Boston, who wrote the script. I wrote the. You know what they call me in musical theater?
What?
A composer and lyricist.
Boy, you're moving up in the world.
Oh,
that's fancy.
Oh man, up, moving on up, right?
Is yeah.
But we were. Had this incredible stroke of luck, and we and our orchestrator for the show is a guy named Larry Hochman, who just won the Tony for Best Orchestration for his work on Book of Mormon.
Okay.
And he did a gorgeous Broadway style score for it. And you know, the songs which I wrote with me and my guitar, which is all I can write with. You know, now there's, you know, sort of a classically played piano and violin, not fiddle, violin, clarinet, flute, you know, classical guitar. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
And it all came from your hands and your guitar.
Yeah, you know, and actually, right when it became time to call you, I was writing up a press release for my latest show, which is really right up the folk middle. It's called Precious Memories. And it's about, okay, I'm going to say a name that even in the folk world, I believe there are only 500 people in the entire world who know who this person is. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Sarah Ogan Gunning.
Yeah.
You know who she is?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're a miracle man.
We're 501 of us now.
There you go. No, you're one of the 500.
Oh, okay.
Right, I've got three others so far.
You want to tell the audience?
Sarah Ogan Gunning was a self-described miner's wife from Bell County, Kentucky.
Yep.
This is the county right next door to Harlan County, Bloody Harlan, where I worked, by the way, for the United Mine Workers of America during the Brookside Strike, which if folks are interested in that history, check out the movie Harlan County, USA, by the great filmmaker Barbara Kopple, won an Academy Award. Pretty good for a movie about unionized working people. So she was, you know, just a self-described miner's wife. She lost one of her kids, starved to death. One died of tuberculosis. Her husband died of black lung. Two of her brothers were killed in the mines. One was disabled in the mines. Just terribly tragic story. And she came from a family, a great traditional singers. Her brother was Jim Garland, who wrote "I Don't Want Your Millions, Mister," and that 25 cents that you paid, and the lonesome death of Harry Sims. Her half sister, 30 years older, was Aunt Molly Jackson, who wrote the Hungry Ragged Miner Blues and "I Am a Union Woman, as Brave as I Can Be." I do not like the bosses, and the bosses don't like me. So a great family and a great family. For traditional song, I think there's something like at least several hundred of their traditional songs in the Library of Congress are the source for many of the versions that today's revivalist singers sing. Just a great family of singers. And Sarah's life was unbelievable. There she was, you know, living in these desperate circumstances in the middle of a mine war, a very violent strike and counterattack by the gun thugs, you know, the armed folks that were deputized and given a machine gun and told to keep order, meaning assassinate the working miners and the union leaders. And from this completely traditional Appalachian background, she ended up on the Lower East Side of New York with her half-sister and her brother, hanging out with a 15-year-old Pete Seeger, who learned lots of songs from her, Woody Guthrie, who I think was in love with her and wrote these amazing things about her, Hughie and Martha Leadbetter, the great Leadbelly, and his singing partner and wife, Will Geer, who played Grandpa on the Waltons, the great authors of the time, Theodore Dreiser, Sherwood Anderson, John Dos Passos, the best-selling author in America. And she, you know, they used to hang out, Woody Guthrie, and Pete Seeger and Sarah Ogan Gunning would sit there sing for rallies. You know, an amazing transition from Bell County, Kentucky, to coal camp. And then it all ended. The Second World War started heating up. Pete Seeger enlisted in the Army. Woody Guthrie enlisted in the Merchant Marine. Leadbelly and Martha went back to Louisiana. Everything changed. And she and her second husband went out to work in the shipyards. He was a skilled metal finisher on the Columbia River. And then when the war was over, they ended up living in a desperate basement apartment in a Detroit slum where he was the janitor. And for 20 years, she was totally forgotten, totally forgotten. And then 20 years later, Archie Green, a shipyard worker and folklorist who had been looking for her, knocked on her door, and she was rediscovered. And she, for 20 years, she was completely famous. She sang with Pete Seeger at the famous 1963 Newport Folk Festival. She sang at the Mariposa Folk Festival. She sang at a banquet for the United Auto Workers president, Walter Ruther. She sang at Carnegie Hall. She made records for folk legacy and rounder, both traditional and her own union songs. And she inspired a whole generation of singers, particularly younger women, like Sue Masick, who stars in this show. And then in 1983, she and Jim Garland's widow, Hazel Garland, and her two surviving kids and some other family were having a sing in upstate New York, upstate Michigan, where they had moved. And Hazel says in a videotape, she said, "You know, I looked over at her, and she had fallen asleep, and I thought, poor thing, she's all wore out. And I looked again, and I realized she was gone." So that's the story, and it stars this unbelievable singer and actor named Sue Masick. It's spelled M-A-S-S-E-K. It's a Bohemian name, not like New York Bohemians, Bohemia, from Europe. She's from a working-class family in Kansas. Her dad was a rubber worker, as Sue says, died of whatever the rubber plant equivalent of black lung is. But Sue has been in Kentucky for 40, 50 years and is authentic Eastern Kentuckian as a singer and as a clawhammer banjo player. And she recreates Sarah on stage. I wrote the script. It was Sue's idea to do the show. I wrote the script. We use mostly Sarah Ogden Gunning songs, one of Aunt Molly's songs, a couple of traditional songs. And what happens is just beyond belief. She is extraordinarily powerful and riveting, and it's an amazing story about, you know, about loss and gain, about hardship and recovery, about rediscovery and renewal. Really inspiring, and Sue just brings it to life. So we got to figure out how she brings it to Yellow Springs.
Yeah, it sounds like an idea. It's something I think people should see. And I'll tell you something else, Si. A lot of people out there, you mentioned how all those years she was in obscurity.
Yeah.
And people, as they get older, they wonder what they'll leave behind. What, you know, if they can, you know, the knowledge that they gained.
Are we transitioning to another song?
Yes, we are.
It's so good. You're so dangerous.
But anyhow.
Keep going, buddy. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But I just thought, oh, man, I see what he's doing.
Well, yeah, you realize that some elderly people even, they don't, you know, they may have things they want and they don't even buy because they want to save a little bit of cash for their children or grandchildren. And I think that's wrong. But the most important thing to pass on is the music, the knowledge, the wisdom. It took you a long time to get there. And so, hey, yeah, I am leading into What Will I Leave? I'll play it for Sarah, okay? It's
yeah,
on
like
the
it.
Brand new
I like
album.
It. That's good, Norm. Thanks, buddy.
Cy Conn and the Looping Brothers. Here's What Will I Leave?
Late in the evening as light fades away, in silence we gather together, searching the faces of those who are here, for those who have left us forever. What will I leave? What will I leave? What will I leave behind? When I am gone, we'll carry on. Will I leave behind? Where are the ones who caught flame in the night, fired up by the heat of devotion? measuring their lives by the light of the truth. They burned like a lamp on the ocean. What will I leave? What will I leave? What will I leave behind? When I am gone, who'll carry on? What will I leave behind? Who will remember the words of the brave that lifted us higher and higher? Who will remember the price that they paid for lives lived too close to the fire? What will I leave? What will I leave? What will I leave behind? When I am gone, who'll carry on? What will I leave behind? Hearts of the ones who inherit your lives will rest in the truth you have spoken. Memory will echo the trust that you kept. Like you, it will never be broken. What will I leave? What will I leave? What will I leave behind? When I am gone, who'll carry on? What will I leave behind? What will I leave? What will I leave? What will I leave behind? When I am gone, who'll carry on? What will I leave behind?
And there we had What Will I Leave? Cy Conn and the Looping Brothers, brand new album. Aragon Mill, the Bluegrass Sessions. You still there, Cy?
I'm just listening to your mellifluous tones, Norm. I just didn't want to interrupt because you were on such a roll.
Well, I'll tell you, Cy, I've been called a lot of things, but not mellifluous.
Is that in writing? You got it.
Okay.
Yeah. Cy, the Looping Brothers, I mean, they're just so amazing. It was just so great to do all this work. And we're by the way, we're going to be touring. We are touring the Southern United States. So folks who are listening online, to Norm Whitman at WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio, right?
Right.
Home of Yellow Springs, Ohio. Check at SciCon.com, and you can get the complete schedule. We're going to be in the Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour. We're actually going to be in Aragon itself. The mayor is hosting the first ever annual Aragon Mill Jam Fest to honor the workers of the Aragon Mill. He and I cooked it up together. His name is Ken Suffrage, and we're pen pals, and we've cooked this thing up. We're going to be all as far north as Louisville. So, yeah, go to SciCon.com, and you can see our schedule. And the other website I hope folks really will go to is go to www.musiciansunited.info, musiciansunited.info. That's the website for Musicians United to Protect Bristol Bay that I was talking about earlier. You got to check out. You'll see a picture of Pete Seeger in one of those little sideways arrows that says, play me. It's a minute and 59 seconds. It's just a beautiful and brilliant endorsement by Pete Seeger of Musicians United to Protect Bristol Bay. And then there's two spaces. One says, I am a musician and I want to help. And the other says, I'm not a musician, but I want to help. There's no charge. There's no money involved. We're just trying to use the power of music and the collective power of musicians to prevent an environmental and human disaster.
Well, I'll tell you, Cy, it's been a lot of fun today. I would like to go out with one of your songs, Wild Rose of the Mountain. I've always been fond of that, you know, Papa singing gospel tunes and Mama sipping whiskey.
Well, you know, you have to reverse the dominant paradigm every once in a while.
What?
I'm fond of it, too.
Well,
I'll tell you the part that almost nobody knows.
Okay.
And it's interesting because when women sing the song, they don't say "Take My Rosie by the Hand." I understand, you know, could easily be a lesbian love song. I'm down with all that, but Rosie is a tribute to my mom, whose name was Rosalind from the Spanish Rosalinda. You know, now we are not Spanish; we're Jewish. But you know, although there's lots of Spanish Jews, we're from Poland, Lithuania, Austria, Russia, you name it. But in my envisioning of the song, the wild rose of the mountain is Rosie, and that's my mom, Rosalinda. So it's a tribute to my dad and my mom. My dad, the rabbi, did not sing gospel tunes, I have to tell you, but you know, he sang the Jewish equivalent.
Oh, that counts.
And you know, and I do write something I call Jewish labor gospel.
Yeah.
Which it sounds like gospel, but there's no deities whatsoever.
Well, okay, I understand that too.
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, I've got to do a little bit of identification here. You're listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WYSO.org. WYSO is a community service of Antioch College for Miami Valley and beyond. This program is Detours. I'm Norm Whitman, and I've been talking with my friend Cy Khan. And Cy, I want to thank you a whole lot for stopping in today and sharing some information with our listeners and everything you do. You're a special. I'm proud of you. I'm proud to call you my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, you know, I'm turning 70 on April 23rd, and I am grateful for my life. I am grateful for having had the opportunity and the energy to work for 50 years as a civil rights and union and community organizer and activist, and as a socially responsible musician. I hope I've been socially responsible. Rubber Blubber Whale may fall outside the category, but, you know, people say to me, "You're a very serious political musician." And I say, you know, you are talking to the guy that wrote Rubber Blubber Whale. You know, but it's not a bad, I'll tell you one last story. So we have a wonderful performance venue in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I live, and it's called Spirit Square, and Robin and Linda Williams were playing there. That Elizabeth Minnick, my very long-term partner and spouse, and I love Robin and Linda Williams, so we never miss their concerts. So they did this, you know, magnificent concert, and then they said, they got called back for an encore, and they said, you know, we have a songwriter friend in the audience, and we like to finish with one of his songs. Well, first of all, they said his, so that meant that cut it in half. And I pretty well know that, you know, we're a small songwriter community. I thought I was the only one there, so I figured it was probably me. So, you know, so I said to Elizabeth, "What do you think they're going to do?" She's like, "Shh, shh." I tend to be noisy in concerts, not just when I'm performing. So they you know, do a couple of licks, and, oh, my God, it's Rubber Blubber Whale. Right? To end a beautiful, heart-raising concert. So as Elizabeth were and I were walking out, she said, you know, all those songs, and 50 years from now, if they remember you at all, this is what they'll remember you for.
Rubber, rubber, well.
But I don't think that's a bad way to be remembered.
Well, I want to thank you again, Cy. I'm going to kick off Wild Rose of the Mountain, and I wish you a very good day, and thank you again for being here on Detours with me.
Thanks to you, thanks to Detours, thanks to WYSO, and I hope I'll be back visiting again soon.
I want to bring you back, maybe after our membership drive sometime in October. Is that okay with you?
You know what? October is leaf season in North Carolina. It's a perfect time to be on the air.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Till the next time, Cy.